Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited.
It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Thanks again to John Doonan for joining us. Keep warm, John. It's chilly out there. So we had pit stops in all of that action, and we also had I did notice in all of that they were fairly routine, Jeremy. Obviously a couple of driver changes that we'll pick up, but it looked to me as though the windward Mercedes AMG was taking the opportunity in there to do a brake pad and brake disc bit rotor change when they were in last time around. Spot on half distance, it couldn't have been any better for them. They've taken that opportunity.
Yeah, perfect timing for them. That's exactly when you ideally would like to be able to change the brakes on the cars. And just back to what we talked about earlier on, I just got a note there from Bobby Golosinski, who's actually watching from Finland, by the way, or listening to us in Finland. I guess he can't actually see the pictures there, unfortunately.
Yeah, there is a TV deal in place
which is a shame for him. But he's listening in, and he made the point about the brake systems on the LMP3 cars, because they're not designed for long distance races, so they do not have dry brake systems on those cars where you can just pull the brakes off and the fluid doesn't go everywhere. The dry brake systems, they cost a lot of money, and the LMP3 is a kind of cost capped car. They're trying to keep it to a budget. So again, but on those GTD cars, that is not the case. They do have dry brake systems on those cars, so they complete those brake changes pretty darn quickly.
Let's go to Andrew, who's got one of the stars of the race again for us. Let's have an update from Ben Keating.
Ben's only got a moment because he can get in the car. Ben, we're still staggered by the lap times you were doing. It was unbelievable. Well, I mean, they shouldn't pay these professionals, should they?
Hey, you and me both, Andrew. It was so much fun. I can't believe they let a 50-year-old car dealer come out here and play with the big guys out there in the top class. It was the most fun I've ever had behind the wheel of a race car. So much fun. I'm pretty excited. I'm getting ready to get back in the 52 car. I got an hour and a half left of drive time, so that'll probably be three stints to finish it off. But we just got first place points in the 12-hour mark. So we're making headway on the Michelin North American Endurance Cup at the same time. So I'm hoping we're in the front at the next 12-hour mark.
Okay, well, everybody will want to do this drive to your cars. Thanks very much. Yeah, Ben's got to get his helmet on, so, yep.
And he is, his car, as they say, have taken top points. That's the number 52, PRM Matheson Motorsport. Just had a change of the lead there at the end of that interview. And Richard Westbrook has gone back to first position. He's only gone and overtaken Helio Castro Neves, the number 5, back ahead of the number 60. Just happened during that interview, right at the end of that interview, going down through turn 1 and turn 2. So
number 5 car was leading.
Helio got the lead, was scored at the lead at the end of the last lap, and then Richard Westbrook has just taken it back.
Yeah, okay, fine,
just taken it back again.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, because number 5 car was leading. Helio took it. They crossed the line 0.006 seconds apart, and as you say, Castro Neves back in front again. So that's our 30. First and second lead changes in this race.
And it will go back on the line as Richard will cross first this time around. He's pulled out a decent little gap there. Meantime, in fourth position, Philippe Albuquerque is trying to close down on Sebastian Bourdais, but he's got Marcus Ericsson pushing him along, and Mike Conway's right behind him as well. Here they come to the line. Westbrook goes through, confirmed as the leader by half a second. That's a huge gap big scheme of things. 60, Helio Castro Neves then relegated to second on that lap. But after the restart, of course, it's all closed back up again.
Yeah.
And it's all very tight. They're all, well, Richard is the one who's got the most laps under his Michelin tyres. He's probably only got 4 or 5 laps still to go in that JDC Miller Motorsports Cadillac, the Mustang sampling machine. Mike Rockenfeller is next to come in. He's in third at the moment, then Sebastian Bourdais. So Helio Castro Neves, actually pretty well off. He's only on his 10th lap of a potential 23 24 lap. Just a quick note about a couple of penalties. The 47 Motorsport was refueling whilst on the jacks. That'll be a drive through there. That's the number 7 47 Motorsport car. And I did see another one as well, but it's just dropped off my screen. That was another refueling on jack stands. There it is. Car banned by Peregrine. Lamborghini Huracan. Car number 39. Sandy Mitchell took that car out, but he was being refueled without the wheels on the ground. And the 64 car, it's the TGM Porsche, isn't it? That car is going to have a very long call into the pit lane because they ran the red light on the exit of the pits. That's effectively ignoring signals from the marshals, from the flag marshals. That'll be stop and 60, and Owen Trinkler will have to serve that penalty within 3 laps.
The LMP2, we just had a change of leadership there. We've now got an IndyCar battle going on there as well, because Rinus VK has taken the lead, and it's Patricio Award has moved into second place. So all of a sudden, Mikkel Jensen, having been leading that class in the PR1 Matheson Motorsports car, into which Ben Keating will insert himself fairly shortly, he's now back into third position. Louis Delatraz is in fourth. Luca Giotto, so two European open wheel specialists up in the top 5 there, and all running very, very closely together. Not far behind them also is the number 68 car is next up in line. That's René Rast in the sister G-Drive car, but he's about 10 laps back.
I got Guido van der Garde down here, about to get in the car. I think BJ's done a fantastic job there.
No, really, really good. We're pleased with him, what he's doing so far. Obviously, he's new for us this year in the team. Last year, had a couple of left as well on this track, but he couldn't do the race because they had a crash in the beginning. But very happy with Rinus, what he's doing so far.
I wonder what it is they put in the water that produces so many great the racing drivers from Holland.
I don't know. It's the moment is crazy. Yeah, we had Verstappen last year, obviously winning the world title, Formula One. We have Rinus, VK in Indy, and obviously of course here in IMSA. And at the moment there's a lot of good racing drivers from Holland, and we are pleased with that.
Guido, obviously in this big race here, but I've seen you in the past racing historic cars at Goodwood. Might you do that again?
Yeah, maybe, but first. Let's see how this race continues, but in the next couple of years I will for sure come back to Goodwood. It's a nice event, so hopefully we can do a good run there.
Fabulous to drive for Fritz, of course.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see.
Let's see what happens with the Jumbo Supermarket car then, Guido van der Garde. Had a little bit of a career in Formula One, of course.
Thanks, Andrew.
In GTD, John, the McLaren is back up front. Car number 70 for Inception Racing. Ollie Milroy has taken that car into the lead again in the GTD class. Ahead of Richard Leitz in the Wright Motorsports car number 16. That's the Porsche in second place. Andy Lally has appeared into third position in car number 44. That's the Magnus Racing entry. Andy Lally has completed more starts than any other driver in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. He's competed in every single full season point scoring round in the GTD category since its inception in 2014. And that for Andy Lally is a total of 87 starts. So he's got more starts than anybody else in this championship. But he's also a two-time Rolex he's a five-time class winner in the Rolex series here. But for Andy Lally, he's gone 50 races without a win. Watkins Glen in 2017 was the last win for Andy Lally, and that is a streak that he wants to break. And he's got that car. John Potter had a tremendous last stint in that Magnus Racing car, and Andy Lally is taking the wheel of it now. Andy was he's just thrilled with this Aston Martin. The team has done a really good job. It's competitive. It's comfortable to drive, and he's showing that right now. So it's McLaren, Porsche, Aston Martin, the top three. Acura in fourth place, Mark Miller now for Gradient Racing, having taken over from Kiffin Simpson recently, who did a great last stint, the youngster in that number 66 car. Then Stephen McAleer in the Mercedes. So that is five different manufacturers in the top five in GTD, and they're covered by 6 seconds.
Jeremy Shaw, John Hindhoff in the Hagerty Global broadcast booth overlooking the beautiful green grass, Great American Race, mown into that, to the Daytona logo. Into the second half of the race, Richard Westbrook by 3.3 seconds over Castro Neves now. Sebastian Bourdais up into third ahead of Mike Rockenfeller in fourth position. And truly is a cracking race we're watching here. Philippe Albuquerque for Cunningham and Alta Acura in fifth position. Sixth for Mike Conway as Mikkel Jensen comes into the pits for the number 52, wins PR1 Matheson Motorsport, Ben Keating's car. He'll drop out of one of the top positions in LMP2. The top seven, the whole field after the restart, still within a dozen or so seconds.
Yeah, and Westy in that leading car, having had that back and forth battle with Castro Neves, he's pulled about 5 seconds over him, and he's just set that car's best lap of the race, Richard Westbrook, last time around, a 134.432.
At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch with us, the overnight Night Owls session coming up on the NBC services, which means we'll be defaulting to Rooftop Ray, Ray Rental Jr. He's got 157 layers of clothing on the roof here. He's actually worked the Winter Olympics for NBC, so he's got all the right equipment, and he's got it all here. It's just 2 degrees above freezing in the air, 6 degrees on the track at the moment. We're starting to chill down as we come into the midnight hour, one of the staging points in our Porsche keys to the race.
And Sebastian Bourdais, he can go quickly too. 1 minute 34.035 in car number 01. That's that car's best lap of this race. So we've got, what, three cars, I think, have set a lap at a 134.0, not very many, in this race.
Yeah, I know we talked about the lap time coming, the lap record coming down.
Yeah.
It stands at the moment to the number 7 Cadillac at 34 flat. When was that set, Jeremy? Do we know?
Yeah, it was on lap 231.
All right. So
by Kevin Magnussen.
Right. Ah, it was K-Mag, was it? Surprises me not at all in that respect now that you've said that.
Van der Zander, I think, had it before that. I mean, it's been traded several times during this race. So Bourdais in that third place car, then 0-1 car for Cadillac Racing for Chip Ganassi. A couple of laps ago, he managed to squeak past Mike Rockenfeller in the number 48 Ally Cadillac. So that was a change of positions. A little bit further back also, the number 31 car with the Mike Conway aboard. Now he just managed to squeak past Marcus Ericsson as well. So a change there as we see Richard Westbrook, the race leader, peeling off into the pit lane, 372 laps.
And that is at the end of his 25th lap, so spot on. Mike Rockenfeller will be in next time around, I reckon, Jeremy.
Including the cautions, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. That gave him the extra lap or so. Fairly standard. New tyres, or at least a change of tyres. Teams tried to get some scrubbing on those tyres at various stages during the week. Let's have a quick word from Andrew before he takes his leave for 48 Ally Cadillac in as well for Mike Rockenfeller, who stays in that car. Andrew.
Yeah, John, I'm just about to sign off and go and have a few hours of shut-eye, but what a fantastic race. I don't really want to go to bed, you know. It's just such a great race, but I'm sure Joe Bradley's going to do a super job now, and I'm sure he's going to interview all the big stars as usual.
He does. He does like a bit of a star. He does. Thank you, Andrew, for your sterling work. Just spare a thought for our pit lane reporters. They are in fire suits, but that makes it difficult to get layers of clothing on over the top because clearly they've got to be safe down there. Then also for our flaggers on the starter stand, always two of them on there. Tony and Dennis, joined by Jonathan this year, and they've actually had to cut their shift a little bit shorter. They were concerned about the cold there. And also, let's not forget everybody out doing the flags around the flag points around the track. So, Jeremy, your thoughts as we head towards 2 o'clock in the morning into the second half of the race?
Yeah, magnificent, just tremendous fun. We've had rather too many cautions for sure, but then, we kind of expected that coming in here. We knew with a field this competitive and with conditions this difficult, it's dry out there, but it is seriously cold, and that makes it very, very difficult. The cars are sliding around a lot, particularly after making a pit stop, or any way they lose the temperature in the tyres, it's difficult to build it back up again. So we knew there were going to be incidents, but it's been tremendously exciting, and we're only just halfway through.
Let's take a look at the class leaders just before anyone else pits. Sebastian Bourdais will be the next to pit from the leading group. So it's Elio Castroneves for the moment, 0.8 of a second, but traffic giveth, traffic taketh away. In GTD Pro, WeatherTech, Maro Engel with Alexander Imperatore right on his tail at the moment, coming out of the Western Horseshoe. That's the GTD Pro battle. And in fact, Risi Competizione and James Collado is not that far away either, and he's right on the tail of the KCMG. Flashing his light, new fastest lap of the race, 33.9 from Seb Bourdais. He tries to take the lead before he comes in at the end of his stint. How about the Ferrari down towards the Le Mans chicane on the back straight, newly named, dives to the inside. There's traffic ahead of him. It's one of the GTDs, the WeatherTech GTD AMG. Plenty of action right the way through. Ollie Milroy for Inception leads by just 2 seconds from Wright Motorsports Porsche with Richard Leitz. In the other GTD category, LMP3, Riley Motorsports, Kai van Berlo in the 74 Ranch 74 car, Rinus VK for Racing Team Netherlands by just on 2 seconds from Patricio Ward for Dragon Speed, and 5 seconds further back, Louis Delatraz. RS2, IMSA Radio, Jeremy Shaw and John Heindorf. Been a brilliant opening half of the race. As we continue live in sound and vision with Bruce Jones and first Johnny Palmer.
Morning, everybody. Fantastic action so far today. And we, as Jeremy Shaw has just mentioned, are only just halfway through. This is IMSA Radio, RS2, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. And if you like your GT racing, well, that's been almost the standout so far. Within GT Pro, three cars absolutely locked together, and one, Bruce Jones, going backwards into the bus stop chicane. That's quite a welcome to the race for you and I.
Yeah, the Chatelier Racing, the number 47 Ferrari in backwards. It looks like it's just kissed with the rear wing, the tyre walls, and should be able to drive away from there. But don't forget, Johnny, that was a car that had a spin early in the race. Roberto Lecourt going around getting clattered. Has spent a lot of time behind the wall for rebuilds. Hopefully this little moment won't lead to another one, but they'll obviously have to check the rear wing when that comes in. But some places at Daytona, Johnny, you can slide and get away with it. I think he probably has.
So Sebastian Bourdais, having just set the fastest lap of the race at just gone 2 o'clock in the morning, that was an in-lap, so that rather goes to explain that the car was getting very, very light on fuel and has blown into the pit lane now for its latest pit stop number 23, and he's off and running again, but that has dropped him back from second position to fifth. It is Elio Castroneves that leads the race by 6 seconds for Acura in the number 60 Ally machine. And then, as I say, 6 seconds further back, Portuguese driver Philippe Albuquerque in the 10. And in third position, Mike Conway in the first of the Cadillacs that are all stacking up behind the two leading Acuras. At times, I've thought the Cadillac has had the advantage in terms of chassis. At others, you have another caution and all of a sudden the Acuras pop up. It is so difficult to predict where we're going to be in just over 11 hours and 30 minutes time. Yes, only 7 DPIs, but they are providing a really good race. And it is flip-flopping depending on what sort of fuel strategy each of those are on, Bruce.
Yes, a quick glance at the timing screen shows that the lead car has got 21 pit stops under its belt. The car in second place, that's Felipe Albuquerque, who's just 7.5 seconds down on Castroneves, who's leading in that number 60 Meyer-Shank Racing entry. But only 19 for Mike Conway in the number 31 car from the Whelan Engineering Cadillac. So they've done something differently. But the thing that's really struck me right from the start of the race, once they got him right, the first caught Ted Giovannis, then started picking off the other cars in the GT class. It's yin and yang. Guess right, Kamui Kobayashi was absolutely fantastic in traffic, but it's just how they negotiate the traffic. 61 cars started this race. We've still got way more than 50 completing. I think we've only lost 3 cars thus far. So it's traffic, traffic, traffic. It's how they manage it, and cold tyres, how they manage those. Everyone's had an experience. This isn't the sort of experience they're accustomed to at Daytona. But the one and only time I've been here, it wasn't a great deal warmer than this, but it was a whole lot wetter 3 years ago, 2019. So you don't only have sunshine in Florida is a message that has to go across to the drivers. They're getting it now.
And up on the high banks, on the speedway corners, you've got the camber, which is helping you around. But for me, the infield has always been the trouble spot, whether it's been raining or whether it is in the drier period. And the high line around the two horseshoes can be really tricky indeed. It's a question of whether you go there on an outlap with stone cold tyres. And I mean, within the last 45 minutes, we've had a couple of DPI cars off the road and very nearly into the wall at the Western Horseshoe. One not, in fact, fresh from the pits at the time. The 31 car, which I think had Tristan Nunez at the wheel at the time, and it went backwards very close to tagging the tyre wall. Incredibly busy on the infield, not least for the 10 from Wayne Taylor Racing and Konica Minolta, the Acura that is being driven by Philippe Albuquerque, sharing with Ricky Taylor, Alex Rossi and Will Stevens. But Albuquerque put in for a lot of the night stints, and this is can often be when he shines.
Now, well, let's just, looking down the order, what's changed since I went for a little snooze, watched the opening as the race, but quite a few cars have had the problems. One has been in the pits for a very long time. It's the number 59 McLaren. Paul Holton listed as the last driver. That's the Crucial Motorsports McLaren. That spent a lot of time down behind the pit wall. Have we got any news of that, Johnny?
Let's go straight to... we've had a shift change all over the RSL team at the 2 o'clock junction. So Bruce Jones, Johnny Palmer in the Hagerty commentary box and in the pit lane for the overnight stint. It's good morning to Joe Bradley.
So it wasn't a good sight when I came down the pits, boys. The 59 Crucial Motorsport McLaren was being pushed behind the wall. I'm going to snuggle in tight, mainly for warmth. What's the problem? I mean, you guys have had a what's called a character-building Daytona, haven't you?
Absolutely. I think at the moment we've got a little bit of a problem with the gearbox. The guys are trying to fix it at the moment. We're just trying to make sure that the car's working more in preparation for Sebring than anything else. It's been quite a character-building evening, I think, for everyone involved. But it's not really a reflection on the effort and how much everything's put in from the team. It's our first shot here at Daytona with this lineup, and I think the boys should hold their heads high, and they've done a really good job.
It never is. It never is. And I suppose the spirit of endurance racing is the achievement is completing the race and taking the checkered flag. And I take it that's what you guys are aiming for.
We've certainly given it a red hot crack, but I think it's at the point now where we need to just fix this problem and maybe put it away for the night. But the guys have worked tirelessly for the last 2 weeks to try and deliver a result. So, it's harsh racing sometimes.
And I take it the gearbox, it was, something you can't factor for, is it? It's not like these days with paddle shift,
the driver can't misuse the gearbox.
No, it's an electronic issue at the moment. It's the e-shift unit isn't communicating, basically. So the guys are pulling for a gear and nothing's happening. So we're sort of stuck in gear and need to try and figure out the problem.
And it's the middle of the night. Couldn't be any worse. Bad news for the 59 down here, boys, but hey, this is endurance racing.
And so many teams through the years, Joe, you'll know this, have come back from adversity from a long way back. Disconsolate sort of tone to the voice there. But sometimes you have to go through these difficult races. And there's another one just around the corner, well, in a couple of months' time, with the Sebring 12 Hours, which will be round two of the 2022 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. We're getting some word as well about the number 66, which is the Gradient Racing Acura. And thank you to Declan Brennan for the information on this. And the last stop, the air jack hose inside the car blew out. So therefore, the 66 Gradient Racing car could not change tyres. And they'll use a manual jack with that then later on. So anyway, the nearly another half an hour has been done. And the 97 WeatherTech Racing car heading down the back straight and into the bus stop chicane with the green roofline very evident indeed. The Le Mans chicane heading in and out of that for yet another time. And the race leader, the number 60, Elia Castroneves car, is coming down into pit lane. So I'm sure this is on schedule. And all of a flurry, the Ally crew jump into action. 24 laps have been completed in this car. So that is spot on schedule. And it will be certainly a different set of Michelin tyres. They don't look to be stickered, so it's very slightly scrubbed maybe in one of the earlier sessions. Remember, qualifying did not take place during race week. That was done at the Raw. So they've had four free practice sessions, effectively.
Well, four is the number because the top four cars are in the pits. Felipe Piquet, wow. Albuquerque has come in the number 10 as well. That's the Konica Minolta Acura. Mike Conway, the number 31 car from Whelan Engineering Racing. And also Marcus Ericsson, 02, from Cadillac Racing. So busy, busy time in the pits. Good time that we've got Joe Bradley down there so quickly. Maybe he's got out of the snuggle and the huggle down at Crucial Motorsports. So plenty for him to look at. But of course,
so the 60's back on the move, and just going to get to Joe again quickly because I mentioned, Joe, that the news we were getting about the 66 Gradient Racing car with its difficulties in the last stop. What more do you have?
Yeah, my immediate concern was just how badly worn will the tyres be. So I've spoken to the engineer on the 66 Gradient Acura and they're not concerned at all, Johnny. So having to keep those tyres that were well used on the car, I would imagine the cooler track temperatures, pretty much freezing track temperatures, is going to assist in that issue. And that it really isn't an issue with regards to stretching those tyres out another stint. They have got the quick jack ready, which is going back to old school stuff. Mechanical jack with a big lever. They're going to lift the car with that next time.
And a lot of these teams will have practiced that for contingency reasons. You can't always rely on the newer spec kit. Oh, 60 car very, very wide and almost into the tyre wall. Now, again, this is cold tyres, Bruce. Car fresh from the pits. It's Ollie Jarvis who is still leading by 5.4 seconds. Albuquerque surely is going to slip through in a moment or two. But the 60 car going straight on the left-hander. So this is after the Western Horseshoe. You turn left almost with the same sort of angle as you've just turned right to get yourself into Speedway, turn one, and it just understeers straight towards the tyres.
Well, he was actually struggling through the first part of the lap on his outlap, but that is an extraordinary moment because he looked so the faster cars had come through. He was just being gentle and cautious on those cold tyres. And it simply didn't turn in. It was understeer city. He stopped just short of the barriers, but it was a really, really unusual incident. Or did he stop short of the tyre walls there? Certainly a lot of steam coming out down there. But it is absolutely spot on freezing. I thought he was being clever and cautious through turns 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. But he's back going again. But this race has been chock full of these sort of little incidents. But for a driver of Ollie Jarvis's level. That is extremely unusual.
These cars, the prototypes, relying, remember, on aerodynamic grip, but Jarvis just couldn't get up to any sort of speed, so the invisible hand of the... And again, he's off into turn one, so tyres just slightly warmer, half a lap later, but again, the ability to turn in from high speed, and it's much faster coming off the banking into turn one to arrest the speed and then get the required downforce, better through the Western Horseshoe, but to be honest, it's going to be another test when he gets to the end of the infield section and tries to get up onto the high banking once more.
We simply cannot stress how unusual it is for a prototype to be out competing in these sort of temperatures, just a whisker over freezing. You think about the heats they drive in a normal race through the IMSA series in the height of summer at Le Mans in the middle of June. It's so super unusual, and whatever the breaking point is and the turning point for the corner, it's not where Ollie's trying to look for it at the moment. He's got to ratchet that in his brain, get his mind ticking around, how much further back do I have to go, how much. But he's had two warnings. Is it three strikes and you're out? I don't know.
Round here, it can be quite forgiving if you have a moment at relatively slow speed on the infield, but we've already seen earlier on in the race, if there's a clash or a misunderstanding on the high banks, that can often see the race over, because there is something on the outside of the speedway sections of this that you do not want to pick a fight with, i.e. the concrete wall or safer barrier. But they were two different moments. Jarvis understeering in the first instance when he was trying to turn left at turn six, and then coming off the banking into turn one, the rear stepped out and he had to try and correct that. Amazing car control, actually, to have not had two bigger incidents. It's surprising for Ollie Jarvis and a man of his pedigree to even be in those moments, but that is the situation we're in this year, folks, at the Daytona 24 Hours, the Rolex, to kick off the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship.
Right, Ollie Jarvis, with that flurry of pit stops and those incidents, is down in seventh place. His lap time last time around, 1:41.8. But before the pit stops on really low fuel levels, we saw Sebastian Bourdais cracking in some fantastic laps. You know, 1:34s, almost 1:33s. 1:33.941, actually, just before the pit stops. So let's see what Ollie Jarvis can do on a lap that doesn't include scaring himself not once but twice. Let's see what a lap pace they can come down to. But it is about taking your time, getting the heat. Well, what little heat you can manage to get into the tyres at the Daytona International Speedway in the middle of the night. And just before the crews were coming off for our changeover at 2 o'clock Florida time, they were just constantly commenting about how it was cold before, but it's much colder now. It really does seem the last couple of hours the temperature just dipped down another few degrees, and I think that's really making absolutely all the difference at the moment.
And you have to feel for those that maybe haven't experienced this weather condition so far this year, this race. So Jarvis thrown in, he's well used to having to pick up from nowhere, as in new driver into the car, and you've got to find the race pace just like that. But you need a couple of laps to work out just how much grip is out there. And I'm sure if he'd known it was so, not exactly slippery, but low temp into turn six, he may not have approached at such a speed. But you don't get that advantage. There's some advice that can be given to you by the team and by the outgoing driver. But again, that has to be delivered very, very quickly. And I caught Mike Rockenfeller offering an awful lot of advice to Jimmy Johnson on the current track conditions many, many hours ago. You've got to try and get that across as quickly as possible, because the infield section is where you desperately need it. And that's the first bit you find on an out lap.
You know, over the years, over the decades, sadly, in my case, looking at some drivers, they are just immensely good at going out on cold tyres. But I just want to say again, reiterate again, of course, as he says, murdering the English language. But it's about just, these aren't conditions they're accustomed to. But also, you get out in this stint, what little stint you light, heat you'd have had in the earlier stints, you're trying to find your market, your points in the dark. This is real muscle memory stuff, but you don't have that muscle memory because you've not driven the cars in the dark in these low temperatures at Daytona. Plus the fact there is traffic absolutely everywhere. And the outstanding thing for me through the broadcast so far has been simply whenever there is an opportunity to get an onboard camera and you get a prototype approaching, not one, not two, but three or four or five GT class cars, how they pick their way through. It is like the ultimate video game is enthralling, and I just find hours go flying by. But it's about the caution, the pace the top drivers have to have knitted in with the caution required to achieve their their performance without just one little incident. We've seen here, as you said, in the last half hour, 40 minutes, we've had two of the prototypes off the track, and then we've had Ollie Jarvis with his two moments. So conditions are very difficult. Right, I said, let's see his lap pace. He's come down by 4 seconds, now by another 1.5 seconds, 1:35.9. He's in the ballpark now. He's got the tyres. But that took him, what, 3 laps? It's a lot of miles.
And it's important to keep your head, because everyone has to go through that horror period just out of the pits. And a number of drivers know this situation, whereas others, as I say, are learning as they go. Let's not neglect what's going on in the other prototype classes, because Pato O'Ward in the number 81 LMP2 car leads that class, and the 81 car with a 3.4 second advantage. That's the Dragon Speed USA entry. Award, Devlin DeFrancesco, Eric Lux and Colton Herter. But Award has been a star earlier on in the week in various of the free practice sessions, and he's fending off Louis Delatraz in the number 8 Tower Motorsport LMP2 car. Then there's a decent gap for those two of 15 seconds back to Guido van der Garde in the Racing Team Nederland bright yellow Jumbo car.
There's been a bit of a shuffle just about half an hour ago, just watching the timings before we sort of took over from Jeremy Shaw and John Hindhoff in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. The top four cars in the P2 class were covered by, I think it was 10 seconds. Now it's gone out to just under 20 seconds. But we've also got in the mix behind Pato O'Ward and Louis Delatraz. We've got Guido van der Garde, as you said. Luca Giotto is just another 3 seconds behind van der Garde. It's super competitive, but how the pendulum can swing. In the early stages of the race, the Dragon Speed car was the one in P2 that was having the problem. But the 81 car now leading the way in class. Pato O'Ward actually being caught very slightly by Louis Delatraz. But again, traffic. Every single lap will have a traffic incident. But the car that stands out in the night is the car from Elton Julian Stable. Not just because it's Dayglow orange and yellow, but because it's being driven very well. But for Dragon Speed, their tail is up on home ground in the States.
So that 81 car is heading out of turns 1 and 2 through the awkward chicane around the back of the pits, and race leader having to negotiate a slightly wayward Aston Martin there coming out of the Le Mans chicane. It's Bruce Jones and Johnny Palmer in the Hagerty commentary box and looking after things in the pit lane. Joe Bradley, who's found Wayne Taylor.
Yeah, it's time for my half distance Wayne Taylor summary. Wayne, it's got the usual cat and mouse look about it, but I somehow think there's a hidden intensity about this year.
I'm sorry, but I really didn't get all that.
It has a standard look of a cat, the usual Daytona cat and mouse, but there's an intensity out there.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you think about it, after 12 and a half hours, you still got 7 DPIs all on the same lap. And, you know, there's been couple of guys have made mistakes. There's been some mistakes in the pit lane. There's been drive-through penalties, but everybody's still on the same lap. It is really, really incredible.
So, what's the tactic? Just keep doing what you're doing.
That's all we can do. Is we just keep doing what we're doing, and we've had a couple of issues. But you know, once we're back on track and we get everything, we all seem to run together. Yeah. It's amazing.
When this morning I was there in the press conference when you were there with the other Grand Marshals, it was quite a hallowed stage. It must be quite a proud moment to have been up there with the likes of Mario Andretti, Jack Roush, Bobby Rahal.
Yeah, it was really humbling, you know, to just literally stand there and look around and see Mario, talk to him, Hurley Haywood, Bobby, Jack. It was really something special.
If I said to you, what was, if you can pick a highlight of your career? I was there when I saw you win the first inaugural Petit Le Mans, for instance. For me, you know, that was quite a highlight to see Wayne Taylor do that and be there. What's your highlight? Can you pick one? It was like choosing your favourite kid, is it?
My highlights have been, the biggest highlight really was in 2017, which was when we ran Daytona with Jeff Gordon and both my sons and won the 24 Hour. That is without doubt, for the family, the best event that I can remember.
That's a good one, Wayne. Thanks for talking to us, mate. I think it might have worked. Thank you.
Yeah, real insight. I mean, particularly gracious of Wayne to write the real thick of the race and thick of the action. Speaking of which, the 48 car has just spun, but really grateful for Wayne to take that moment to reflect back to so much history of, well, I mean, the very first Petit Le Mans was in the late 90s, so nearly 25 years ago, a real stalwart of sports car racing. Now, I think there's been some sort of failure on the rear right, or is it the wheel that is working its way loose of the 48 car, which is the Ally Cadillac? Now, who's in that, Bruce?
Jimmy Johnson at the moment. And that right rear wheel is, it might be the trick of the light. No, absolutely, it can't be. The bottom is splaying out. Was the contact. So it was a big save there by Jimmy Johnson, but he's got distance to go back to the pit. So he's down in sixth place. Was sixth place. Ollie Jarvis will be going past because Jimmy Johnson, the NASCAR superstar, limping his way back round. Is that a quick fix? But I'm afraid, Joe, head off down to Ally Cadillac Racing because 48 is coming in.
Joe's ready to receive. It's going to be a little while yet, and there's a decision to be made here by Jimmy Johnson about how fast he wants to go. He is down on the apron, so beneath the double yellow line, but there are sparks now pouring out the rear right of this car. The fireworks display that happened late last night is almost being repeated here. And for Jimmy Johnson, he's quite a long way into this stint, 15 laps in. That's what makes me think it's more of a suspension failure or an upright that's gone rather than the tyre that's working loose. If this was an outlap, I could understand that the wheel hadn't been attached properly. But you do not expect this nearly 25 minutes into a stint. Oh, he spun it. He spun at the Le Mans chicane. And comes to a halt. Now, there are going to be GT cars starting to fly through here. Jimmy Johnson sitting right in the middle of the track. The tyre's gone as well. And the Michelin rubber no longer existing on that rear right corner. A plume of tyre smoke as well. But Jimmy Johnson, who stalled the car in the spin, had to restart. The headlights extinguished briefly and then came back into action. I am amazed, both through the avoidance action and also, well, Jimmy Johnson's reaction to get the car up and running again, that he wasn't collected there. That could have been disastrous. He should now be able to get back to the pit lane from where he is.
Okay.
So the 48... I just wonder whether there's some contact action that caused that spin, because there was another car off which I hadn't spotted first time around. Maybe a GT car?
A GT car. It was at turn two, and the cars both went onto the grass on the right-hand side of the track, and that's where the damage was done to the 48. And Joe, news from Ally Cadillac Racing.
Well, there's no messing about here in the Ally Cadillac pit. 48 car is with me. Oh, and that's a suspension failure. Right rear. It's gone straight behind the wall, and the advantage for the Ally team is that their pit garage, or their paddock garage, I should say, is just through the gate, and then a straight line straight in there. It's already in the garage and up on the jacks, boys.
Thanks, Joe. And the thing that really got me was spinning between the first and second parts of the Dunlop chicane. So the cars, luckily for him, the next two cars were some distance away. They were coming effectively out of the first bank corner, turn nine, and he wasn't caught because the car was sideways across the track. As you said, lights were out. That doesn't help for a car coming in, but Jimmy Johnson got that fired up and got back around again.
Yeah, so a real moment there which will grab the headlines. Jimmy Johnson is back in the pit lane, but it could have been a whole lot worse. Got into the behind the wall and in the garage, as Joe described. But contact, I think, has led to that suspension failure. Part of the wheel buckled as well. Now, we need to try and identify which GT car it clashed with. It's always tricky coming around turn one. If you're then side by side with a GT car that clearly needs some road space as well, and if you just misjudge whether the car, your car, is quite past the GT machine, I mean, it's a mangled mess, is the rear right wheel. And very much evident is the contact that was made. The GT car that it clashed with, I don't think, has come into the pits. Joe, you're right with this car.
Yes, Johnny, and that wheel does show signs of contact. I'm not sure whether that's cause or effect. I'm going to say cause, because
it's definitely caused, Joe. Yeah,
of that wheel has been ground away from, as you described, Johnny. Car going on the high jacks, that's the hydraulic jacks that lift the car about 3 or 4 feet above the ground. That enables the team to get underneath. No doubt that there's probably going to be extensive damage to the under tray. In fact, I can see little traces, not sure what effect that is. Kamui Kobayashi, Kamui, was there any information as to what happened out there? No. Okay. Yeah, they know as much as we do. Jimmy Johnson in the car and stays in the car. I think he does. Yeah, he does. So Jimmy Johnson at the moment about 3 or 4 foot in the air while the team go to work.
Thanks very much, Joe. And okay, let's play the detective game. I sense from a very quick look at the replay that it was a blue GT car. So I'll give you a choice. Can't be the 23 Aston Martin from Heart of Racing team. That was eliminated. It could be the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche. It could be the other Heart of Racing Aston Martin. That's car 27. I suppose the Cetelar Racing Ferrari, number 47. Or possibly even the Gradient Racing Acura. But you know what? Probably none of them. It was under cover of darkness and with headlights. Car spinning around. It could have been the Acura. It could have been some of the others. But maybe if we get treated to a further replay, we will be able to pick it out. But certainly we know the car that was given the hit. That was the 48, the Adelaide Cadillac Racing. That's the car in the pits with all the damage that Joe was just describing.
Somewhere on my massive timing screens, I should be able to work out the latest lap times, rather, for said cars, but I might be able to do that whilst Bruce is next talking to do some detective work. I'm also very interested to know which GT car had to go right across the grass at the Le Mans chicane in avoidance of the stationary Jimmy Johnson Ally car. Somebody else threaded their way through where that car was parked and the curbing, because the racing line was actually available, but you needed to be so many more metres further back in order to judge that and work out, yes, I can still turn in at the usual point. Sebastian Bourdais leading by a little over 6 seconds. And when I say a little, I mean 3/1000ths of a second over 6 seconds. And that gap is opening up, or at least did last time around, because Richard Westbrook didn't quite catch the traffic and lost a couple of seconds. Mike Conway is in third position in the Whelan Engineering Cadillac. So it is Bourdais leading in his caddy as well, Cadillac Racing 01 car, but there are going to be many laps lost here by the number 48 Ally Cadillac as a result of this contact. They're trying to work out how deep that damage goes. It's the driving wheels, remember, so if it's pushed a half shaft into the gearbox or similar, that could take quite a while to solve. Mike Conway really pushing on, a 135.4, and almost four-wheel drifting it through turn one there. Again, someone who's pretty deep into their stint, so that's not down to cold tyres, it's just down to the ambient temperature, both in the air, but also down at track level, Bruce.
Yeah, and I think he's also a driver who's really got his mojo. He's found the stint pace, the pace that you can achieve on the tyres, and he's also, but I tell you who's lapping faster, Sebastian Bourdais, not just leading the race by 6 seconds, nearly 8 seconds now. He's pulling away from Richard Westbrook. Richard was super quick when he took over, but right now Sebastian's on fantastic form. He was great before his pit stop, but he's lapping below 1:35 in the night. And if you're just clicking in to listen or to watch, let's just point it out again. It's only a whisker over freezing at Daytona. No, I haven't gone mad. It's the weather that's gone mad, and it's the drivers who are trying to sort it out. And everybody has to try and get the heat into their tyres. Don't go too hard too soon, or you'll be spinning. And as Johnny pointed out, the first part of the lap from turn two, where they join the circuit after the pits, through till turn seven, you're twisting, you're turning. If you've got no heat in the tyres, you do what we call an Ollie Jarvis, because he had two moments trying to find some heat. One, going between turn six and turn seven, simply understeered off the track a short while ago. And then, more scarily for him, when he reached turn one at full racing pace and didn't quite turn in, saved the moment, but that was a warning.
Quite a collection of fans now, even at this early point in the morning, just gone 2:30 a.m. There's a collection of fans outside the Ally garage, keeping an eye on the repair work. And another car that has come to a halt out on the racetrack is the T3 Motorsport North America Lamborghini, car number 71, with the lights, headlights flashing on and off. It's Misha Goikberg. And Goikberg is not on the racetrack. He's not on the racing line. So I wonder how long race control will leave this before they decide to push the big yellow button. It's not in an immediate danger of being collected. Three wide through Speedway Turn 1, and that was a DPI car going high and wide. One of the caddies dealing with an LMP3 car next to its left. It's the 01, in fact, of Sebastian Bourdais. So talking about the race leader, but going up very close to the safer barrier with an LMP3 car to his immediate left and a GT car way down towards the apron.
It's opportunities like that in the middle of the night to appreciate the skills and also just the years of experience that Sebastian Bourdais has. Not hesitant at all in traffic, has built in a little bit of a cushion, a little bit of gap in case anything happens. He sees a couple of cars. Right, I can identify it's on the exit of the Dunlop chicane, now called that for the first time, where Misha Goikberg has gone off. He's gone through, call it a four-part corner. He's gone straight on at turn three. He's in the escape road. Lights are flashing, but going absolutely nowhere. Not in a place of peril. He's a good... he's now finally moving. He was 59 yards away from the exit of the corner. He's now 60, but he's only gone a yard, and he's stopped. The lights are still flashing. Double yellows, not waved, though, at the moment, and most of the drivers have had an opportunity to see him, but they'll just see two tail lights. At least the lights are on, unlike when Jimmy Johnson spun in the track there. But the track workers are closeted against the cold, many, many layers of clothing for them. But the heat will be in the cockpit of that T3 Lamborghini, and quite what the problem is, clearly, Johnny, no drive whatsoever for Misha Goikberg.
Yeah, and is it a problem that's rooted in an electrical issue, perhaps, rather than an engine difficulty? I'm puzzled by the fact that these lights are being turned on and off. There is a rescue unit now that has arrived because we're going to go caution. So the caution is out around the racetrack for yet another time. And we have nearly reached 13 hours here on RS2 IMSA Radio. Another caution. This will, if anything, help the Allied crew because they're going to be losing less time. Still trying as frantically as possible with the car up on the high jacks, the incompressible jack stands, to try and get the repair work done. But the underframe of the car is now the focus. So clearly that side-to-side contact that was done at turn two has done significant damage not only to the wheel, but also to the innards, the drive train of car number 48.
Plenty of work going on that 48, but it's that dreadful thing, Johnny, where you've got to be logical. You've got to work out how deep the problem is. You can't go for a quick fix. And so the crew really, really just going through the process. But is Jimmy Johnson still on board? He was certainly, when Joe Bradley was down there last, still in the cockpit. Yes, he is still sitting there. Is Joe still around down there? Because it'd be quite good if he's not, for him to scurry back. He's not in the pit lane. The car isn't in the pit lane. He's behind. He's in the paddock.
Nick Johnson coming into pit road in the 54 car. That is from third position of LMP3. And the Swede for Core Autosport choosing to make a stop. Remember, everybody during this caution period will cycle through as well. So Joe Bradley is back in the pit lane. This Lamborghini, by the way, is now about to be stretchered towards where Joe is, but we'll get back to him now for some news.
Yeah, I'm at pit in awaiting the arrival of a flurry of pit stops with this track now gone full course caution. We're just waiting for the pit lane to open. Meanwhile, I can just see across to the inside, just behind the pit perches, let's say, and the number 48 car still on the hijacks. Jimmy Johnson remains in the car. They got a lot of work done very quickly on that Ally car, and I can't see it being that much longer. And as you said, Johnny, this full course caution benefiting the 48 car massively because they're losing less track time. As the clock ticks away while that repair job goes on, the cars are going around the track at a lot less pace, and so they're losing less space between them and the other runners. They can still come back and get back into this, no question.
Well, of course, you've always got the chance to gain laps back during these caution periods. Not in this instance for the Ally machine, but later on, opportunity to gain one or a couple of laps with each of the cautions there. The 71 car has been towed to the area of the infield, which is just to the immediate left of the Le Mans chicane. There is a gap in the fence there. That doesn't necessarily mean that the car is out of the race. If they can restart it and get back onto the racetrack, they should be able to continue. But what you can't do here at Daytona is have the car towed via the internal roads back to the pit lane and rejoin in that fashion. You must enter the pit lane on the racetrack, unlike some of the other 24-hour races that we cover here on the Radio Show Limited network of channels, where outside assistance is permitted. This is effectively like Le Mans rules racing, where you'll need to use the car under its own steam to get back to the sanctuary of the pit lane.
Yeah, as tempting as it may be with the network of infield roads, and whenever you get an aerial shot of the Daytona Speedway, you look around at just how many interior roads and routes there are, and the many, many versions of the circuit that have been over the years, changed and tweaked for all sorts of purposes. But right now, drivers going around at greatly reduced pace, as Joe pointed out. So what does that mean? Tire temperature drops. What happens when they go racing again? They need to get the heat back in. But I think that memo has gone to all of the drivers across the field, and what a packed field it is. And in fact, the Lamborghini now being towed in. Sorry, correct that. It's stationary. It's just looking at safety car around the track. We've got a prototype going very slowly behind. Johnny, what do you make of this one? Very, very slowly, trying to work out which car we're riding on board. Is this? Oh, that's presumably our race leader.
It's the
01. Sebastian board 8. Got it now. The other's on wave past.
Yeah. So the wave by happening, and any of the cars caught between the safety car and their class leader will be allowed by to effectively reset the field. That just makes sure that even though the overall leader may be in awkward position if you're in some of the GT classes, there's not this huge gap which is enforced. And it's interesting actually over the last couple of years that some other championships are involving this part of the safety car procedure in their regulations, namely the World Endurance Championship and the European Le Mans Series as well. So they are allowed to be waved by, and this will start, or in a moment or two, once the field is in the correct order, the pit stops will begin for those that want to take it. In fact, they're going to start now, and that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 DPIs all peeling off, possibly more. It's just that the five-card train stretches out of my frame. But Joe Bradley is, as you would expect, expertly positioned at pit in, and you're going to be greeted by probably the whole DPI field.
Oh, I really have, and you've got to be really light on your toes here, boys. The 01 has gone straight into and behind the paddock and into its garage, whereas the 31, the Whelan Engineering Cadillac, that's come in for what I would describe as a regular pit stop. And as you described, Johnny, a flurry of pit stops all the way down the pit road. You've got to be really, really aware of your... really aware of your presence. The 31 wheel spins off, the number 10 just getting out ahead of it. That's the Konica Minolta car ahead of Whelan Engineering. I'm off to the 01 garage and to find out what is going on there.
Yeah, because we did not expect for Sebastian Bourdais the fact that he would have to drive, and it almost caused a collision on pit road, because as Bourdais was trying to find the gap in the fence to go behind the wall, caused all sorts of confusion behind for Ollie Jarvis, for Philippe Albuquerque, and Richard Westbrook as well, needing to take avoiding it. They were trying to get to their pits. Just as Sebastian Bourdais was driving into his garage, the 01 crew were ready to receive them. And that is puzzling for me, because the car was going pretty well before the caution came out.
Right, still a caution period. Is this the moment? Well, Joe will find out. Joe, let's go down to Joe. Are they doing the standard brake change?
I have just arrived at the 01 Cadillac Racing Pit, and Sebastian Bourdais stays on board. There's certainly some brake work going on the front end. On the rear end, it's more towards... there's a lot of work going on the centre of the gear, where the suspension attaches to the gearbox. We've got a brake change going on the front axle. Nothing going on regarding brakes on the rear axle, so they are using this caution to get that brake change done in the environment of the garage. Front brakes and an alternator belt and a battery change. Thank you for that. So information from the team, alternator belt, which is of course the alternator's right under the suspension components attached to the side of the gearbox, and it's belt driven off the drive shaft. A very compact engineering on these cars, and that's what's happening. So pretty routine stuff. Yeah,